Dave Fanning on 2FM. Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Alan, have you entered?
I don't drive.
Oh, you don't drive.
Not since 1992.
Now is the time to start. Okay, the voice is Alan there, who's in front of me, which is Alan Corr, because this week Mariah Carey revealed that she's planning on releasing a secret grunge album that she did back in 1995. In the same week, Eminem had his first number one in the Billboard Hot Christian Songs chart. Artists switching genres is what I'm talking about here, at the peak of their career too. It's not a new thing, but it's a gamble that doesn't always pay off. So Alan is here, as in Alan Corr from RT Entertainment, to talk about the musicians who felt the need to do something completely different. So, Alan, Mariah Carey, going grunge on her new album, or are we talking 25 years plus?
Well, apparently this was an album she recorded in 1995. Now, Mariah, whose mother, Patricia Hickey, yes, is, of course, of Irish descent, so she can do no wrong as far as I'm concerned. I'm a fan. But she recorded, when she was recording her huge smash hit album, Daydream, back in 95, she and her fellow musicians also secretly recorded this alt-rock grunge album. Now, she first mentioned the existence of this in her book, The Meaning of Mariah Carey, last year. But now new information has come to light about it, and she wants us all to hear this album. It was released under a different name by a band called Chick, and the album was called Someone's Ugly Daughter, with Mariah singing backup vocals. But now, apparently, the original vocals and the kind of musicians' work has been unearthed, and Carey has described the project as an outlet for herself during a period when she felt particularly constrained. So basically, she felt as though she had no, you know, freedom at the time. She was signed to a major label who were basically controlling her, I suppose. So she did this kind of what she calls a breezy grunge rock album. So she even did the album art, Dave, which is a cockroach and some scrawled lipstick. So, I mean, this is something that she wants to put out, and I'd be fascinated to hear it. I remember going to bed with Mariah Carey in the Clarence Hotel, because she did her all interviews in bed back in 95, and I asked her, was she a fan of bands like, Courtney Love's band Hole and that kind of grunge movement that was kind of petering out at the time, and she said she loved it. So that was a real flip side.
But she didn't tell you she had already recorded an album secretly.
I remember there was news swirling around back in 95, really? That she had done this. So it's come to light again, I guess.
Well, and she's always been given out about kind of being controlled and the way, record companies and marrying the wrong person and
indeed,
all that, in terms of all that. So what about all these musicians who swap genres? What is it? Boredom? Is it like, no, I want it, like, they just want something else and say, well, I'm good at everything.
I think a lot of people, you're probably the same as me, your blood runs cold when an act declares the fateful words, midway through a gig, I hope you like our new direction. Mm-hmm. But I firmly believe that all music acts should do whatever they want and be genre fluid, as the great David St. Hobbins from Spinal Tap, a band well known for genre swapping as well, once said, I think too much stress can never be placed on the dictum that one must follow one's own star.
He's right.
Absolutely. So I think that these acts, they get into, swapping genres through a combination of boredom, the fragile desire to be taken seriously, and the feeling that they've run out of road. It's also a chance to, flex different artistic muscles and reach a new audience. I remember John Peel famously said about The Fall that they were always different, always the same. So that's kind of an interesting one, I think. Yeah. But I think that musicians are always adding new colours to what they do. And there are some acts who've gone through pretty radical changes, such as Dylan, I suppose, Bowie throughout his career, the Beatles as well. But, I mean, they're all remaining in a similar genre, I suppose. I mean, one of the big complaints that music critics, whoever they are, level at bands by the time they get to the third album is they haven't progressed. So that's a big complaint. You need to progress. There's also things to consider with a band like the A&R man is always involved. The marketing department is always involved. So some bands are forced into repeating, a winning formula, and they can't break out of that kind of winning formula, and they get very frustrated by that, So unless you're Coldplay or Ed Sheeran or U2 or Taylor Swift, of course, who changed from, country to full pop with her album 1989 and became one of the biggest stars in the world, it's very hard to break out of that stranglehold the record label has on you.
Sure, but by the same token, like a band like the Ramones, people always say they were the same. They weren't. I thought they really did a lot of different stuff later. But AC/DC, let's face it.
There's a very funny quote about AC/DC, actually. I remember, early enough in their career, probably the late 70s, a rather sneery journalist said to them, how do you feel about just writing the same song over and over 18 times? And the late, great Bon Scott, who was to die in 1980, said, sorry, mate, it's 19 times.
Right. Yeah,
and I thought that AC/DC, their new album, album sounds like an album they made 25 years ago, but I don't care. It sounds
brilliant.
No, that's
the way it should be with AC/DC. Yeah, that's kind of the point I'm making, all right. Yeah, indeed. Okay, so Eminem, Christian number one. What on earth is that about? In fact, tell you what, I'm going to play a little bit. Here's 30 seconds. Use this gospel, Eminem. I'm born with Jesus. My weapon is prayer. Simple as I squeeze it. I'm blessed like sneezes. Call me Jesus. I'm effed in the head. Maybe I'm bonkers. Regardless, never claimed it. Be flawless, long list of mistakes I've acknowledged. I wish I would say something positive. On the cave, then I'm positive. They'd rather trade with the with me. Whether because they would fare way better with the mods than they would exchanging some bars of training. Any bars with shady in it probably is painfully obvious to compare godliness to an atheist. But I got them audiences raving. And amidst my scrambles, I got some awesome inspiration to draw from off on pen and paper. I'm not. Like, I mean, you know, okay, the religious right in America, or the Republican Party, whichever you want to call them, I mean, like, they're huge at the moment, right? No question about it. So is he part of all of this now or something? Is that it?
I think, as we've seen with Trump, Dave, the religious right in America loves, you know, a repentant sinner, or at least someone who pretends they're repenting. Trump is a good example of that. So here's Eminem, the former bad boy of rap who built a reputation on smashing taboos and saying the unsayable. And as you say, a couple of weeks ago, he went to number one in the Christian charts in America with a song with devout Muslim DJ Khaled. And that's a song from the new album. The song, as you just played there, is called Use This Church. And Use This Gospel, I should say. And it's a remix of Kanye West's original track from his album Jesus is King. Now, interestingly, Dave, Kanye's original version samples County Down Band, Two Door Cinema Club.
Really?
Yeah. And it also includes, that was a good payday for Two Door Cinema Club. It also includes a saxophone solo from Kenny G. So already it was mixing genres, I suppose, you know. But I think this news that Eminem has hit number one on the Christian chart was greeted with, or the God charts, if you will, was greeted with gasps of disbelief from fans and hosannas from true believers. And if you can listen to the rap, it's the usual kind of anxiety-tinged, edge-of-breakdown rap from Eminem. And the rap, part of the rap goes, Bible at my side like a rifle with a God-given gift. Every single day I thank God for. That's why I pay so much homage. Praises to Jesus, I'll always. The mention of rifle there probably went down very well with the religious right as well.
Okay, so like the charts at the moment though in America, seriously.
I just don't look at them anymore. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, just all of, I mean, like the, and all these genre charts too. It's just funny.
Oh, that's mind-boggling. It's like the, you know, the way the Grammys has 568 different categories. There's one for everyone in the audience.
Yeah, if you haven't won a Grammy, you're nobody.
Well, absolutely. You know, and I think that a large part of Eminem's
success. Best Speed Zydeco. And the nominations are. Okay, let's have a look at some of the artists who took a leap into a different genre. We'll start with the most famous example, the sellout, as it's called, Bob Dylan.
Judas. Yeah. Well, I mean, I've always found this very funny. This, of course, is when Bob Dylan went electric in 1965. Now, people have been trying to hang a sign of Dylan for over 60 years. And as he sings on Knocking on Heaven's Door, Dave, Mama, take this badge off of me. I can't use it anymore. So Dylan's always downplayed this idea that he's, you know, the voice of a generation. That's a millstone around his neck. He calls himself a song and dance man. And let's face it, he's always been mercurial. He's always been trying to change. He's always been chasing that wild Mercury sound he spoke of years ago. But when he made that change to electric in 1965 and rejected the keepers of the folk flame at the Newport Convention, the old guard thought the move was treasonous. Yeah. And it led to those kind of calls of treason at the Manchester Free Trade Hall the following year, I think. That was the year he also played the Adelphi, was it not?
Yeah, it was.
Even before that,
Pete Seeger with an axe. Yeah, he's trying to cut.
Oh, that's right. Sing
me, Bob, at the Newport Folk Festival or something.
This axe, whatever.
No, to get rid of the electricity and go back to.
Oh, right, okay. But it's not as if Dylan wasn't kind of like doing this before. I mean, he was turning the whole idea of folk music on its head, and he went on, of course, to do, you know, record a Christian album in the late 70s. He did a series of albums based on the Great American Songbook. So, you know,
Christmas album
as well. He did an ad for Fredericks in LA, the lingerie shop. But nothing has ever been as seismic as that great leap he made back in 65.
No, indeed, absolutely. Now, tell me about Billy Joel. Why is that a curious
one? This is a real curio. This is Billy Joel, of course, the blue collar piano man and penner of some pretty great ballads and rock outs. But he released a classical music album called Fantasies and Delusions, indeed, in 2001. Now, this was his 13th and final studio album. He hasn't released anything since, apparently. And he basically wrote compositions for his friend Richard Jew, who is a British-Korean pianist to play. Sorry if I'm pronouncing his name incorrectly. So he wrote these compositions. It didn't do very well on the Billboard chart. It went to 83, but it went to number one on the top classical charts. There's another genre for you. So the titles of songs like words Opus 2, Waltz number 1, Nunley's Carousel, the 11-minute Opus 7 aria.
Did any of this work?
Listen to this one. This is the last track, okay. Opus 10 Air.
No, I'll tell you what I'm going to give you. Fantasies and Delusions. This is actually an opus on this one. Oh, sorry. Right, okay, here it goes.
Oh, yeah.
Play the hits, Billy. Come on, Billy.
Lyric FM. You've tuned into Lyric FM.
Indeed. Tell me about Elvis Costello. Paul McCartney released
He's done 5 classical
really?
Albums. Also released 3 electronic albums with the music producer Youth under the name The Firemen.
Yeah, and one of those ones from 2008 is fantastic.
Is that, what's that called?
I can't remember, but it's brilliant.
Yeah, there's 3. I don't remember them that well. Elvis Costello. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Elvis Costello. He's an incredibly prolific guy and one of the great genre benders in music. So he may have started out in the London, pub rock scene. Then he became the face of Angry Young New Wave. But he was never going to sit still. He's a musical polymath. Early in his career, he recorded Almost Blue, a very fine album of country music covers. His 1989 album Spike features the Chieftains, Christy Moore, Donald Lunny. He's made 2 classical albums. One with the Julia Letters, one called the Julia Letters with the Brodsky Quartet in 94. The album he did with Burt Bacharach, Paint from Memory, was great. Now, Elvis is often accused, very unfairly, of being kind of a dilettante. That really annoys him. I'm sure, anytime I've talked to him and you make that suggestion, he really gets exercised with that. Like, why can't he do what he wants? Bowie and Dylan never got that really bad press for changing and following their artistic instincts. And back
so
in
what are you saying a lot of the time is you're not allowed?
Yeah, there seems to be these kind of like gatekeepers who say that, no, you should stick to what you're doing. I mean, 2 of my favourite Elvis Costello albums are Blood and Chocolate and King of America. And they both came out in 1986, months apart. And they're very different albums. You know what I mean? So he should be allowed to experiment and follow his own creative star, I think,
Primal Scream?
Primal Scream. I mean, yeah, The Scream. I mean, they would have started, the Scottish man would have started off as kind of psychedelic, Byrdesian kind of jangle meisters.
It's funny.
Yeah, then they, with their
was
first
that
album.
There's always been a dance element to our music.
That's what Melody Maker said, because all these after Stream of Delicate came out in 91, there was a rush of artists like the Soup Dragons and the Farm trying to capitalize the success of that. And as you say, Melody Maker dubbed them all. There's always been a dance element to our music. Now, the funny thing of Dave, of course, is like the mighty That Petrol Emotion, who emerged from the ashes of the Undertones, they were mixing guitars with dance beats 6 years before Primal Scream were doing it.
Yeah. What about like a Spinal Tap are in the middle of all of this, really, aren't they? I mean,
absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they had their kind of hippie flower period, did they not? They had their prog period. They had their heavy metal period. So, Spinal Tap is a satirical movie. They're a satirical band, but they managed to nail down the fragile egos of artists who wanted to show they were actually kind of serious, creative people rather than just being in a rock band.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, like the Bee Gees, obviously mid-70s, did they invent disco or... Like, did they go so different to what they had been?
I wouldn't say they invented disco. I would give that to Giorgio Moroder or someone like Gareth Marden, the producer who's a guy who got them, turned them on to dance music. Because by the early 70s, I mean, I'm a big fan of the Bee Gees. They're responsible for some of the great kind of beautiful...
Brilliant songs.
...psychedelic tinge songs.
Here, I'll give you one of those. This is what they used to be. Look. Have you seen my That's as good as it gets, really. Yeah. So, we're talking here success. Like, they were really, really successful, and this put them into the stratosphere.
I mean, they did have a dance album before that, I think, in 1975, called Main Course. But, of course, when they did the soundtrack to Saturday Night Fever, they'd moved to Miami, which was a dance capital at the time in America. They hooked up with Arif Mardin, the producer, And they scored one of the greatest soundtrack records of all time, one of the biggest selling soundtrack records of all time, for Saturday Night Fever. Brilliant in the 60s. And that, I mean, I think what they did in the 70s was one of the greatest second acts in music history.
No question. Without doubt. Just go back a bit. I forgot that, like, you know, a folk band, were they the Birds? And then okay, I'm not going to say they invented psychedelia, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and this kind of raises the issue of, like, you know, are they really jumping genres or just exploring the genre they're in and trying to expand? But you could say that, you know, they started off as purely a folk rock band. But then in 1966, they went much more psychedelic.
Yeah. Man, they were expanding the music and expanding their minds at the same time.
I think they heard the Beatles and loved really beautiful Rickenbacker sound, that ringing Rickenbacker sound. Best seen on 8 Miles High with that Cat's Cradle of a guitar part by
Roger
McGuinn. Of
that. Yeah, he was with us here once and I asked him, was that about drugs? He said, no, it's about being up on an airplane. It's like you're starting to get the guitar started there. You're like cranking. Anyway, okay, that's the Birds. So can we go to jump up to nowish, or Katy Perry?
Katy Perry.
What did she do that was different?
Katy Perry is, you know, she is one of the biggest pop stars in the world. Her breakthrough hit was I Kissed a Boy. Now, this is in very, very sharp.
A girl.
Kissed a girl. I beg your pardon, Dave. I started a joke, so that was the Bee Gees. Beg pardon. Yeah. But she started off, she's the daughter of two pastors. She grew up in a strict Christian household where MTV and pop music were verboten. They were absolute no-nos. But, you know, she released her Christian album in 2001. It got a very good review from Christianity Today. And she, Perry, was into pop music on the sly and she wanted to go mainstream. So she studied under professional songwriters in Nashville and enlisted the help of producer Glenn Ballard, who was the man behind or co-wrote Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill, which sold 50 million albums. And 8 years after her debut, the newly named Katy Perry had grabbed the forbidden fruit, making the crossover from her pop album to becoming, you know, from her country album or a Christian album to be one of the biggest pop stars in the world. So that's a real genre.
Well, here, I'll give you a blast of both. Hold on. This is, first of all, here's our Christian music. So it was a Christian album and her parents were pastors?
Yeah.
Right, okay, fair enough. Well, then it came to this. I Kissed a Girl, that's Katy Perry now. Alan's here talking about 10 more, but we've only got time for about one or two, so you go ahead, tell me more. Well, in change of genres.
Well, I think that Joni Mitchell, she evolved from this, you know, art school ingenue to a beacon of the folk boom and later a lady of the canyons. But, like, you know, people talk about her 1979 album Mingus, the album she made with Charles Mingus shortly before the jazz great died, as her big genre kind of shift. But The Hissing of Summer Lawns, back in 1975, that was her going full, you know, jazz rock maven, you know, with that album. It was very, very jazzy, kind of labyrinthine kind of music. But Mingus is the one that nearly ended her career. So she teamed up with Charles Mingus, and this is an album of very abstract, minimalist jazz, strangely tuned guitars, and even wolves, you know, howling through the song The Wolf That Lives in Lindsay. So she had people from Weather Report on, including the great Jaco Pastorius. And she had rap on it. It was her and Charlie Mingus doing rap. So, I mean, it was an album that kind of didn't do her bank balance any good. But I think in retrospect, it's probably seen as an artist being adventurous. And you know,
in retrospect, was David Bowie doing it on every Lincoln album?
I think so. Because
it changes.
If you listen to, let's say, his first two albums, and let's say the first album, then The Man Who Sold the World, he was doing this kind of black country rock. He was doing heavy rock.
Yeah.
Then he was doing glam rock. Then he was doing plastic soul with Young Americans. So he made an absolute virtue of doing everything, something different with every single album. And I think that's why he's considered one of the greats and one of the most interesting people when it comes to being
genre-fluid. Talking artists who switched genres, and we have Mariah Carey's grunge album. We have Eminem at the top of the Billboard Christian Songs chart. My God. Alan Corr, good man yourself. Alan from Entertainment, RTE, that is.
Dave Fanning on 2FM.